When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm loving the hair, man. I like that.
Thanks. Yeah.
Is that, was it?
I've managed to evade the scissors for a little while now.
Yeah. Is it for a role, or are you just like, I'm just going to let it fly?
A little bit of both. My son and I kind of made a pact that we're going to grow our hair out. So he's 12, almost 13. And so he's growing his hair out. And so I'm kind of, we're kind of doing that together, which is kind of cool. 'Cause I go away a lot for work and, you know, we don't have a lot of time together in those,
sure,
in those stretches. So, to be doing something together, even though it's something stupid, like growing out our hair, it's kind of,
hey, you know, yeah, whatever it takes to, you know, get that bonding in, you know?
Yeah. And I've also incorporated it into, some of the roles that I'm going after and interested in, and some things that I'm doing. Like I'm doing a movie called The Stage, next year. And it's a small independent film about a magician, who performs on stage, and I wanted to have long hair for that. So there's a couple of things too that that I've done that, you know, it facilitated long hair. So
first of all, I'm extremely jealous just because I'm unable to do that. I'm the opposite. I'm, you know, my hair is like going, you know, whole backwards thing. And I got two sons myself, and they got, you know, the luscious hair.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I'm just telling them, you know, just wait.
I know. I you know, the axe falls where it falls, but I think, for me, I'm just doing it while I can.
Yeah. I wish I would have done that, man. This is Hair Talk with Henry Thomas. This is what we brought him on for. It's
How long have you been a president for the Hair Club for Men?
It's been 15 and a half years now. 16 will be in April. So, improv, folks. but I've been excited for this interview for the about 15 hours I've known about it, but it was like a quick turnaround. I was like, oh sweet, all right, let's do this. We had Dee Wallace on a few months ago, and that was that was a real treat. And she's, oh man, I mean, you know, she's amazing.
She's great. Yeah. She's a wonderful lady.
Yeah. Obviously first we want to, you know, talk about this new movie you got coming out. I believe the time of this recording right now, I believe it was released today. No, or am I totally wrong?
Yeah,
about
probably
that?
It's in it should be in theaters now. It's called Sam and Kate, and it's starring Sissy Spacek and Dustin Hoffman, and their two kids, Skylar Fisk and Jake Hoffman.
Yeah, that's interesting in itself right there. That, yeah, you got, they're playing mother, daughter, father, son in the movie, and that's really what they are. Do you know about the what the writing process was for that? Like how this movie came about and how it turned into them casting it like that?
Well, it's interesting because I first heard of this through my friend, who's a producer on the film, Orion Williams. Orion grew up in Texas. I've known him for many years. And he came to me with this script and introduced me to Darren Legallo, who was the writer and director of Sam and Kate. And this was about 8 years ago or so.
Oh, wow.
In Los Angeles. And I had read the script and I thought, it's great. And Darren approached me and said, I want you to play the lead in this. And I said, well, I think I'm a little too old for this character, but, you know, I think it's a great story. I'd love to do it. And the project kind of failed to launch a couple of times, I think, you know, as projects do, financiers fall out and, you know, you lose money, you got to start back over again. And
sure.
Anyway, Dustin Hoffman and Sissy Spacek coming on board totally changed the game. And of course, they were able to secure financing. And I think it was Dustin's idea that, you know, Jake could play his son, and that started a whole thing. And Skyler, of course, came on board, I think, pretty early on. So
yeah.
So, you know, it really took on a new life once they came on board, and I think it really made the film very special.
No, definitely. Yeah. It definitely adds to the, I think, chemistry of the characters and everything like that, you know, because, you know, obviously they already have that, you know, that relationship with each other. So it's like,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. There's gravitas there, you know,
right.
History already.
Definitely.
But it's interesting because, Darren Legallo is from San Antonio, Texas, which is my hometown. And when you're from San Antonio and you meet somebody from else from San Antonio outside of San Antonio, it's kind of like the stars aligning, because that rarely happens. Most people, like at least from my generation and I think Darren's generation, like if you were born in San Antonio, you usually stayed in San Antonio, you know,
that yeah.
was just the way of it. But I think that's changing now with, you know, the whole country kind of moving around, but
definitely,
but it's always, to me, it's always kind of a, it's kind of a cosmic moment, because I'm always like, oh, wow. It's weird to meet somebody from my hometown.
And yeah.
Especially within the industry. But I kind of thought, oh, this is special. You know, this is a cool story, and I get it, because it feels a lot like San Antonio, you know, parts of the story. And I think Darren was drawing on a lot of stuff, you know, from that place.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So yeah, that's nice that you guys kind of had that connection, and yeah, you were able to see the similarities, that way. Now, you know, obviously you starting out as very young in this industry. Now, were you, did you move to LA when you were young, or were you in San Antonio for a while?
I was in Texas until I was about 24, 26.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I grew up there and kept a place there. You know, I had a farm. My parents, had a farm and, about like 230 acres, you know, 30 of which was ours and 200 of which my dad leased.
Okay.
He had cattle and things like that. And my mom had a goat dairy and everything. So yeah, we were like out in the middle of nowhere, but closest to San Antonio.
So you a goat's milk guy? Is that what you put
in
your cereal?
I was raised on raw goat's milk. Yeah, that was my go-to.
I love goat cheese. I think, you know, society puts, you know, different weirdness. I mean, when you think about any animal milk, like even cow's milk, it's like, why are we drinking milk from cows and goats? But anyway, I don't think I've ever actually tried goat's milk, but goat cheese, man. Whew, that is one of my weaknesses right there.
Goat's milk is pretty good, but it's, it's different from cow's milk.
I would assume so. I assume it has more of a tang to it.
It's a little sweeter actually. But the thing is, raw cow's milk versus raw goat milk, I would go with the goat milk.
Interesting. Okay. So right here. So do you still drink it?
Oh no.
No, you didn't have a choice back then.
No, so, my mother like forced it on me.
Yeah.
But I'm glad for it. I think my relative good health is attributed to growing up like that.
Yeah. Now, because I want to say I read that you are in Oregon. Are you in Oregon or am I just way off?
I am in Oregon.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I moved up here about 5 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah, my kids go to school here, and you know, I'm living here to be close to them, and I'm kind of wondering where I'm going to end up. Really, I don't know. It's kind of a funny thing when you live out of a suitcase your whole life, and you start thinking about a permanent, you know, permanent location. It's kind of a tricky thing to tackle.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah, that's, are you in like the Portland area?
Yeah, I'm kind of in between Portland and the coast. I'm kind of in a rural area.
You ever watch Portlandia?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, there's some funny parallels there.
I hear that. Whenever I ask someone who's from Portland, they're always like, it's crazy how accurate that show is in capturing. Yeah.
There are certain things, you know, just like one shot will just make you crack up laughing. Because
Yeah, I'm sure there's some that, just go over people's heads who aren't, you know, who don't live there or aren't from there. But I love that show.
But I'm kind of, you know, I haven't really spent a lot of time here because I've been working a lot in the last 5 years, and I've been working on long format shows, you know, so that takes you away for 6 months at a time. And
yeah. Well, go ahead.
Oh no. So I feel funny, like, saying I live here because I really don't know it very well. Like, I know Vancouver, BC way better than I know Portland.
Okay.
Just because that's where I've been most of the time.
Yeah. No, yeah, definitely. But speaking of the TV, my co-host, he wasn't able to join today, but he did want to me to mention that he is a huge fan of Midnight Mass. He wanted to just give his regards, I guess you could say, to that show. Is that still going to be coming on, or is that over?
No, that's just a one season.
It was just a one show. Okay.
Limited series. Yeah.
Gotcha.
But no, we have another inception of the, Mike Flanagan universe in Fall of the House of Usher, which will be out on Netflix probably next spring or maybe next fall. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Okay. Dave, I mentioned it. So there you have it. I unfortunately have not watched the show yet. I plan to, but yeah, that was for Dave.
I'm glad he enjoyed it. It was a great show, I thought, and I had a lot of fun doing it, but it was pretty taxing, like being in prosthetics, because I don't know if you know my character in the show, but a lot of the characters in the show, we kind of age in reverse. So, you know, we start off in our 70s and then get younger as the show progresses. And to accomplish that, we were in the chair doing special effects prosthetics.
Yeah.
For hours, you know, at weird hours of the night and early morning. And not my favorite way to work.
I'm always curious about the prosthetic, like, makeup chair. Like, how do you keep your sanity for those hours of sitting in that chair?
Well, a lot of it is a lot of it is just kind of focusing on relaxing and kind of like getting yourself in sort of a meditative state where you can just kind of not freak out.
Sure. Yeah.
not like get up and jump around. And a lot of it has to do with the makeup artists themselves, because luckily had some great people. This guy, Ozzy Alvarez, who he used to be a pro skateboarder.
Okay.
And now he's a special effects guy and has been for years, but he was just a great guy. So we would just talk, you know, for hours. But the awkward part is that, you know, you get called in sometimes at, you know, I got called in at 2:30 in the morning one time for a 6 a.m. crew call.
Oh, man.
You know, so I had to be there in the chair at like from 3 to 6. And then I had to go work from 6 to 6, you know?
Yeah. It's like, so, I'm forgive me if I'm not, you know, talking to you. I'm not trying to be rude. I'm super tired, guys. Come on. Give me a break, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to be a decent human being when you, weird calls and hours like that, you know?
Exactly. But I'm sure they understand too. Cause I mean, they're up that early and have to do it too. So they're like, no, I'm fine. I don't want to talk.
it's just hard on everybody because you got people that are working like twice as many hours as
anybody
else, and or the same hours just offset by 6 hours.
Yeah, exactly. And then when they're doing the work on you, I mean, you essentially just have to sit there, whereas they're actually, you know, have to be focused and, you know.
Right. And, you know, and I'm playing a supporting character, so I'm coming in every 3 or 4 days sometimes.
Sure.
Maybe 2 or 3 days in a row, maybe 1 week in a row, all in a row. But like those guys are coming in every day
for
production to make up everybody. So they're exhausted by week 8, you know?
Yeah, I'm sure. Now, you mentioned he was a skateboarder. I know you're a musician and things like that. Were you ever in the skateboarding scene?
You know, I was when I was a teenager. I was really into skateboarding, and I had a half pipe ramp that I built with my friends in my backyard, and you know,
yeah,
I had delusions of going pro and all of that.
You're like, I'll be a movie star instead, you know.
But this was before the kickflip. This was
longboard stuff or like
no it was like twist toho plant era.
Yeah,
lots of hand plants.
Oh, okay.
No kick flips.
Well, learned to kick flip?
I can attempt it, but it usually ends in disaster.
Well, I can attempt to act and it ends in disaster. You know, I can attempt a lot of things, but
hold on. You just have to be in the right hands, you know.
Definitely.
You have to have the right editor.
Exactly. Now, I mean, fans of the show know I'm E.T. Circulates. It's always in my top three films, depending on my mood. It's number one, but it's always in my top three films. So I'm trying my best not to geek out on you too much. you know, cause you've been hearing it for 40 years now. I mean, the 40th anniversary just happened. But I am curious, was there, cause it seems like you're humble about it now. You're up to answering questions, but was there like a period in your younger career where you were just like, I don't want to be known as Elliot from E.T. Like I'm sick of this. Like,
oh, for sure. Yeah. When I was in my early 20s, I totally did not want to be associated with that role, because, you know, I was really trying to be taken as a serious actor.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, there was a stigma. There is a stigma, around child actors in the industry, you know, or there, there certainly was, but there used to be a stigma about people who did television versus people who did film, and
yeah,
people who do commercials versus people who do stage, and all the various hierarchies. But a lot of those have kind of been subdued. But it's still there a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
There's still,
I can imagine.
But when I was a young actor kind of coming up, of course, you know, that was like an albatross around my neck for a little bit. But honestly, it's only been good for me. It's only helped. And
sure.
And it's great that everybody has fond memories about the character and the film.
Oh yeah. I mean,
it would really suck if it was like, you know, touted as the worst movie of all time.
And right, where
star of the worst movie of all time, that would be really bad.
Where people are like ironically like it and stuff, like kind of like the Troll 2, I think, is one of those films. It's like, do you want to be part of that kind of history or Spielberg, like movie magic? Like, it's just,
yeah, I mean, it's, so a, it's like it's a great, it's a great little, you know, it's a great little doorstop to keep the grand door of Hollywood from closing completely on me.
Sure. Yeah. Now, when were you in that sort of attitude of, you know, you want to be known as a serious actor and things like that when you got your Gangs of New York role? Was that?
That was actually all of the work that I had done in my early 20s kind of coming to fruition, because I had worked a lot in independent film in the early 90s in New York, and I had developed a reputation as being a good actor. I had a role in Legends of the Fall, which was kind of a widely seen commercial film and serious film, you know.
Right.
And so then having All the Pretty Horses and Gangs of New York kind of all in the same time, that was probably like the height of my career, you know.
Right. Yeah. I mean,
so far.
There you go. always keep, you know, looking up, working at it. Obviously as a kid, you know, working with Spielberg, you know, you had the chance to work with Scorsese. You already, you know, being the age you were when you did that film, you knew Scorsese's a legend, like, you know. But at the time of E.T., like, were you aware of Spielberg already, like, being, like, a legend? Like,
yeah, but, you know, at the time, he wasn't quite a legend.
Right, yeah.
You know, in the way that he's regarded now. I mean,
correct, yeah.
He had huge, you know, the first blockbuster with Jaws, right?
Yeah.
And Close Encounters, but he had also had a couple of failures. You know, he had had 1941 and Used Cars, and you know, and the industry was kind of still speculating about him. He was this kind of wonder kid who had come along at a very young age and, you know, kind of turned the industry on its head, but he wasn't an established guy. Like, he wasn't regarded as a serious director. He was still reaching for that. He was only 33 when we did E.T.
Wow. Yeah. That's yeah. That's insane when you think about it. Yeah. It's a weird saying it, but yeah, you're essentially still a kid.
And it all pretty much happened from like 1975, 1976.
Yeah.
On. I mean, even though he had been working, I think, before then, in the industry. But he was still a big deal. I mean,
sure, yeah.
On a Steven Spielberg movie was, oh, this is big.
Yeah.
he was a big director. He was, you know, known as being one of the big guys.
He's in the Shark movie. I mean, he made the Shark movie. Come on, the Shark movie.
But you know, but more importantly, he had like he had the executives at Universal. And he had you know, he had real Hollywood power. You know, he could get movies made or get them not made.
Yeah, yeah, he had that, yeah, that, yeah, like you said, the power, yeah, which, speaking of which, I'm Monday seeing the Fablemans, which I'm excited for, so.
Yeah, that's exciting, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like almost like autobiographical,
my tongue autobiographical.
There you go.
About his life and growing up. I think he grew up in Arizona, I'm not sure.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and some people say E.T. is kind of, you know, part of his childhood. He took that from, you know, his childhood and everything, his parents being divorced and all that. So, but yeah, definitely looking forward to that one. So, you should have been in that. Come on.
Yeah.
Should have called him up.
we've only worked together once, really.
That's crazy. Yeah. That's, it's like, I mean, I assume
he was an executive producer on Haunting of Hill House.
Oh, okay.
But it was because it was a co-production with Amblin TV.
Yeah. speaking of that haunted house, it reminded me, Psycho 4, right? Was that the one you were in? Psycho 4? Sorry, now I'm just, you know, geeking out on everything now. That was one of those movies where I think I'm way too young to have watched when I did. And, but I just, I'd obviously already seen E.T. and everything, and I was like, Elliot, what are you doing? Like, what is happening? Like, was that kind of like I gotta be in this to that'll separate me from Elliot to be in this?
Not really, actually, although, you know, unintentionally, I think it did.
Yeah.
But no, I actually got that part through, people I had worked with when I was a kid on Cloak and Dagger in 1984.
Okay.
Yeah. So Les Mayfield and George Zaloom were two guys that were working with Universal, and they were producers on Psycho 4. And, you know, so they looked me up because I wasn't actively working at the time. I was just finishing high school and I didn't really know what I was going to do.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
So, you know, I did this movie cause I thought, oh, I'll play Norman Bates.
That'll be cool. Yeah. I mean, come on.
And I got to work
with one of the most iconic, you know, villains of all time, you know? And
And I, so. You know, I was, my mom was a huge fan of Anthony Perkins and, you know, she had seen like everything he had done. So it was kind of a thing where I wanted to do it.
On the show, we typically, you know, obviously we didn't have time today to do this, but we have, you know, people who are in the business on come on, break down a movie that they chose that they wanted to break down. I know we only have a couple minutes left now, but if there were a movie you would want to like break down and talk about, like what would that movie have been? Putting you on the spot here. I know it's
break down a movie and talk about it. Probably be either Dead End with Humphrey Bogart.
Oh,
or maybe High Noon.
Oh wow, yeah, that's both great choices. I've seen High Noon. I don't think I've seen Dead End, which I love when people pick movies I haven't seen because then I watch it and then we talk about it. It's always...
you gotta see Dead End. It's great. It's like it's set in New York and like the Lower East Side. And it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of a movie about the class struggle in New York, you know,
and
how close they are together and how that causes friction and stuff.
Okay.
And Humphrey Bogart plays like this gangster who's like on the lam, and he's come back to his old neighborhood and, you know, expecting like this grand reception, and
okay,
it, you know, and it's
nice. Yeah. And you can't go wrong with Humphrey Bogart. That's,
no. Yeah. He starts becoming undone by, you know, the fact that he's not as respected as he thought he would be being famous, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I'm definitely gonna have to check that out. And we'll have to set up a time for you to come back on, and we can break down that movie. That would be a lot of fun.
Love to do it. It's also a real excellent capturing of the Bowery accent in New York. That was probably the real accent of Gangs of New York, how everybody would have been talking.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Yeah. So did you use that movie like when you were making Gangs of New York? Like, did you go back to it?
Yeah, I watched it, but I also, I thought my character should be Irish.
Yeah.
Because my character was written as like this Italian kid, but I didn't feel like I looked Italian, and so I asked Marty if I could be Irish, and he said yeah. So you know,
it's like, fine, all right, I'm not gonna fight with you.
Oh, yeah, sure. No, I think that's good. I think that's probably a good idea. Irish.
A lot of Irish people
in New York at the time, not a lot of Italians. It's true.
That's a great Martin Scorsese right there. I might use that as a clip and say, hey, do you guys know we had Martin Scorsese on the show? but yeah, I know we got to let you go, but thanks. I could go on and on and on about all your work, but anything final you want to say about the new film coming out?
I got a new film out, Sam and Kate. I also am a published author. So if you want to pick up my book, if you enjoy fantasy, if you like Game of Thrones and Lord of the Rings and all of that, then go pick up Window in the Mirror, written by yours truly, Henry Thomas.
Look at that. And it's out now?
Oh, yeah. You can buy it on Amazon or anywhere.
Nice. I'll definitely be checking that out, and we'll plug it.
And if you want to hear me narrate it, you can buy the audiobook because it's me narrating it.
I love when they do that. So that's, yeah, good. I'll get to hear your voice more. Hopefully get some more Martin Scorsese impressions in there. I doubt it, but
yeah.
I was going to do a rapid fire questions, and I made myself laugh. I was going to ask you E.T. or Alf.
Sorry, E.T., I think.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. Yeah, no, I understand. All right, Henry. Well, thanks so much for doing this. It's been an absolute pleasure of mine. Thank you so much. This was an honor.
Thanks for having me on the show. I really enjoyed it. Have a great day.
You too, man.